your parliament, religion, or society. The other was to be alive. Mr. Speaker, this is my 19th speech. I'm my 7th as government minister. I will begin my speech by giving a synopsis of what has been achieved over the last year in relation to my areas of responsibility in the culture, the media, news, and sport. Mr. Speaker, the Sports Academy of Musical Performing Arts, GAMPA, has had another successful year. GAMPA is housed at 63 Black Action Road. I am pleased to report that they have already outgrown those places due to their huge success. GAMPA can now boast nearly 400 students. It is currently outsourcing space in South Carrick Road with recreational rooms, as well as the drama studio and the music room at Bayside Comprehensive School. Therefore, given its huge success, the government has decided to allocate more facilities to GAMPA. I am pleased to announce that the old district courses beside St. Bernard Middle School will be made available to GAMPA. This newly refurbished building is expected to be ready this month. The services will provide much needed space as from September. In our 2011 manifesto, we conceived a scheme known as Learn an Instrument. This has taken the form of a campaign which promotes certain instruments which children might not necessarily be aware of. This year, teachers of the Academy toured our first and middle school in Gibraltar. They used what is known as the Saranga music system, which encourages, excites, innovates students from music teaching and the learning of it. They have been able to recruit students to attend the Academy on a regular basis. The Academy has held a great number of performances of other initiatives, which include drama, choir singing, and orchestral music. On the first day of the year 1617, the group of the moon, they participated in and organized 12 events. From September to December, the first term of the 1718 year, they were involved in 8 events. And in 2018, this year, from January to June, they have been involved in 12 more events. Speaker, a very successful and busy schedule. GAMPA continues to work very closely with the Powerful Foundation in order to develop the Powerful Foundation Scholarship Program. This grant program has been designed to help the next generation of musicians and actors to develop and provide teaching contracts and preparation time. The government is pleased that the program has been renewed for another year. Scholarships for excellence and promise and for beginners whose small potential are being offered. Private scholarships have been awarded to students who qualify under financial hardship rules. This goes to the heart of our philosophy as a government. No child should be left behind due to financial constraints. Ensemble scholarships have also been awarded in order to develop children's ensemble skills. The objective is to have some students eventually as a youth orchestra. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the Powerful Foundation for the partnership they have established with GAMPA. All part of GAMPA's development program has assisted business skills and Notre Dame schools, learning support facilities, and St. Martin's Special School. This is through the provision of 8 hours once a week of drama therapy with a fully qualified drama therapist. The Academy, as well as the government, feels it is our duty to provide performances, opportunities, and workshops to children from all backgrounds and intellectual abilities. So much, Mr. Speaker, for ignoring the vulnerable. This program is working very well. The Academy is now an official examination center with board of the Royal School of Music exams has been held in the board for the decade under the management of the College of Further Education. For the last 3 years, this has been conducted at the Academy, which at the moment has the best facility. It is a great opportunity to offer all our local students the chance to have better examination conditions. These exams have also included the 20 Rock and Pop, which has proved to be very successful, and the 20 College London Drama Exam. Mr. Speaker, I now move on to the Gibraltar Cultural Services. Today, organizers authorize many events for and on behalf of the Ministry of Culture. Some of these events carried out in conjunction with other agencies. This has been the case with the first ever and most successful Youth Open Day, which took place together with the Gibraltar Youth Service. The Ministry Festival happened in conjunction with the Gibraltar Youth Board. Although together with other departments, the Street Art Conservatory, also together with the other government departments, the Street Art Project has been launched as part of the government's urban renewal and regeneration policy. This year, on behalf of the Ministry of Culture, comments on new initiatives. They have launched the Youth Art Gallery as part of our cultural development program. The aim is to create cultural, heritage, and youth leaders of the future by providing a platform dedicated to young people. The first ever artisan Christmas market for the Lionwood Road Boulevard has been organized. They have organized and supported by the cultural development program, including the Fitness Gallery and the History of Our Film at the Labour Centre, among other events. GPS has and is in the process of organizing a number of retrospective exhibitions. They organize one depicting the Gibraltar's faculty through the culture setting. This project is successful and features many local designers, such as the late Johnny Pierce and the late Eduardo Chiodo, amongst many other individuals in the local fashion scene. They further organize Gibraltar's presentation at the Island Games 2017 Gotland. The presentation was held to promote the Island Games that we will be hosting in Gibraltar in 2019. They're currently working to launch in January 2019 an exhibition that will celebrate the life, work, and legacy of the Gibraltarian radio culture. Works have also started for the July 19 Island Games exhibition that will celebrate Gibraltar's participation in the Island Games from 1987 to date. This will be organized in conjunction with the Gibraltar Chronicle. All these exhibitions are part of our government's ongoing cultural development initiatives. GPS has been instrumental in promoting what is this government's policy on exporting our culture to the rest of the world. We have now established a number of annual events which help local artists exhibit their work abroad. This is the case with one of our artists participating annually in competitions at the Royal Academy Summer Exhibition. The Gibraltar Berlin Art Residency Project will take place for the third year this month. This will be a Gibraltar artist taking up an art residency in Berlin, and a Berlin artist doing a residency in Gibraltar. This will lead to a book and an exhibition that will be going in October at the Master Hall. We have also supported four local artists to exhibit at the Berlin Exhibition, which was organized in London in October last year. Our latest endeavor is supporting and promoting a cultural exchange between the government of Gibraltar and the people that came out of the country. This will be 18 Gibraltarian artists exhibit at the people that came, and work from the people that came coming to Gibraltar will follow the lead of the Art Gallery in February, March 2019. GPS is also charged on behalf of the Ministry with
organizing a number of our events and festivals during the year. This includes this talk, which has proved to be extremely popular. The spring festival featured the young Shakespeare Company, which were essentially thrown over from the UK. The other popular by Peter. The list of events includes the opening program. There's a whole list, but as I just mentioned, the international art competition, literary and poetry competition, the drama festival, classical concerts of Antarctica. UCS has been working on updating the cultural register in line with the current child protection policy, as directed by the Child Protection Committee. The government, through UCS, has been able to acquire 30 new artworks for the government art collection. Most of these works are with our creators original, and others were produced by many local artists. UCS does not only organize events, but also charged with maintaining and looking after cultural practices. On this front, we can see how early efforts that they managed have been concerned. This includes the matter of the core, analyzing that if the core has seen new light installations, and all of the fairs have had structural work and general festivals. The central hall. There are things in the Historic Africa Art Gallery, the Fine Art Gallery of Christmas, the Jenna and Monty Bastion, the Mario Finnington National Art Gallery, and all seen improvements. Mr. Speaker, the government remains firmly committed to the development of culture locally and to export our art to the international level. Therefore, as the Minister for Culture, I am delighted to confirm that devote cultural services on behalf of the government will establish a cultural development unit during this financial year. The unit will introduce training programs for cultural officers, groups, coaches, performers, administrators, and persons involved with our culture in general. It will support cultural organizations, develop generic cultural educational programs, and most importantly, organized training in cultural leadership. Mr. Speaker, it is imperative that we produce programs that serve the need for the creation of cultural leadership in the future, in the same way as we have been taught. Apart from UCS, the ministry itself has organized many events during the past year. We include events like the Jazz Festival and the Dance Festival. Mr. Speaker, our government agreed contribution in relation to the Gibraltar Colony, but before I will tackle the contributions from Mr. Yama. Frankly, it doesn't make sense. Don't they talk to each other? Mr. Clinton and Yama seem to be speaking terms with each other. On the one hand, Mr. Yama accuses me or not giving them enough information. Then he says that we have spent 5.6 million on the state eligible to quality. Have you read the estimate books? That is not the figure in the book at all. So where is he getting this figure from? When he says that last year we had a ban for on ticket sales, so where does he get that information from? I would like to think that he's not getting into the habit of the TSC of saying talking crime. Lies. Mr. Speaker, before I close on a purely cultural part of my address, I must also reply to the Honourable Mr. Speaker, following his comments on MTV, which you want to call it festival. It is clear that Mr. Clinton does not like under this question. He is not active. Unlike the thousands upon thousands of Gibraltarians who turn out buying tickets twice a year on the other more, and turn out to have a good time. Mr. Clinton probably here and say, do what you want. I like good books. Some classes will use it too. However, I do not let that color my judgment. When I remember, as explained about the cost of this, I would like to take a few moments to explain the value of events as opposed to the cost. First and foremost, the expenditure includes 400,000 of money that has been spent at the NCD Gibraltar College for 2018, i.e., the deduction in the estimate books from 2.5 to 2.1 this year. The following are reports from NCD that one to the week for their program through corporate marketing, social media outlets, etc. These also have a value in monetary funds, in money terms. Social media value by artists using the Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat account is estimated to be £306,000. Commercial value, monitored by exposure per minute of the developer Tony Brown on Channel 5. Comedy Central is worth £142,167. NCD has made a comparison with other of its programs dedicated specifically to festivals. This figure, NCD is that got 4,512,003 views, which had a value of £383,520. NCD presents by festival with 6.1 million views, with a value of £518,538. NCD Barrel Beach got 3.5 million views, with a value of £297,790. NCD Gibraltar College, Mr. Speaker, got 7 million views, with a value of £593,305. And on the general interest programming on other platforms, the value is £255,464. Therefore, a total of 1.3 million, 3 million, exactly 1.296926. That is why, though the expenses this year have been higher, it has been worth every single penny spent. And this day, the greatest Gibraltarian of all time used to tell me, when I was on the other side, you know the cost of things, but not the value. So what in relation to the Royal Theatre, where they were spending for a space that cost away £10 million, and the value was great, because it had nothing to speak for. So to speak of all kinds of responsibility regarding the media, this is likely to be the most significant year ever of our national broadcaster BBC. It is expected that late next year they will move on to brand new services at South Jumper's Boston. BBC is also celebrating its 60th anniversary in February this year. BBC TV marked its 56th year in 2018. Despite the consistent service to our community, BBC has never been able to operate for adequate facilities. But it's time to change, Mr. Speaker. And going forward, our national broadcaster will operate from a state-of-the-art facility. BBC's management team is fully focused on the location project. Design work is now at a very advanced stage, with a site of construction imminent. The new broadcasting house will include two television studios, and four radio stations. together with studios and transmissions, control rooms, technical areas, and function office accommodation. Estimated the completion of this project is towards the end of 2019, early 2020. Mr. Speaker, this financial year, net activities in investment in technology will be linked to the relocation project. Although ongoing equipment replacement continues, this necessarily impacts on the new systems being installed at the new broadcasting house. So, operations engineers and specialists, consultants from UK, are revising plans of actions to ensure that the existing facilities are able to continue broadcasting with a seamless transition to the new building. GBC, the Voter Preview Limited, which also falls under my responsibility and which operates the digital TV and radio transmitters, are also planning its new relocation of the system from Fairfax Road to the new radio location. In a project of this magnitude, I am ensuring that all interested parties work together to arrive at the ultimate goal of having the best broadcasting facilities possible for the UBC's employees and the community as a whole. Notwithstanding a relocation project, UBC continues to inform and entertain local audience. UBC maximizes its budget to provide consistent programming for viewers and listeners. In addition to this, UBC News, UBC Sports, UBC Radio, and Radio Gibraltar are very active in social media platforms and via their websites and apps. The speaker TV programs that can be highlighted from past 4 months are the Gibraltar related travel show, inspired by Madeira, the local history program in the bookstore, the local natural history series, Rock Explorers, the viewpoint series, and notably its public debate, the City Park Community Show, the live FIFA World Cup Gibraltar qualifier, and numerous Christmas, New Year's, and Easter sessions. There have also been an array of major outside broadcasts. These have covered events such as National Day, New Year's events, the CET cover page, amongst others. Radio Gibraltar has not stood still either. It has replaced the sound coordinating with its diamond jubilee and ensured it is present at a variety of public events through its community roadshow. The UBC Sports Awards were deservedly expanded this year, with this having become a must look forward to events by our local sports fraternity. As a Minister of Sport, I am delighted that UBC would recognize the achievement of our outstanding sportsmen and women, and I take this opportunity to congratulate them all for this year's winners. Mr. Speaker, another highlight of the past 12 months was the BBC Open Day. It raised a massive £127,000. It's true testimony to the generosity of the devoted businesses and general public. The community rallied around GBC every Christmas, practically as a one large family to raise funds for the very local project. GBC employees deserve a very big thank you for leading on this and making it such a success. Mr. Speaker, we are proud of our television and radio stations, which consistently deliver. And so, I have no hesitation in paying tribute to its management staff for their passion, dedication, and high editorial standards. It's not easy to give, given how expensive the media business is, while having to compete with such larger foreign channels available locally. UBC Chief Executive assured me that work is already underway on programming for the next 12 months and beyond. There are several teams in pre-production and broadcast rights having been acquired for the live coverage of Gibraltar games in the new UEFA National Nations League in September and October this year, and the Euro 2020 qualifiers next year. Games are also in hand for comprehensive coverage of the Gibraltar 2019 Island Games. One innovation that will happen shortly is the introduction of closed captioning of TV programs on air. For some time now, GBC has proved subtitles as provided for the subtitles for the hearing impaired via its website. With this now being extended to programs aired on television, improved technology has meant that with a reasonable investment, systems are being upgraded both at broadcasting house and the Gibraltar free new limited digital multiplex and most local programs on the repeat going to include closed captioning. Although this will still be bound by a 24-48-hour delay in the production of fact cycling from the initial broadcast, to move the move will soon provide the local hearing impaired community with a much enhanced opportunity to follow many GBC's local programs via TV service. I am confident that with the resources made available to GBC and as the corporation works towards moving to their new community, that Gibraltar will continue to benefit from and enjoy their own local TV channel and radio station. Mr. Speaker, I now move on to my responsibility as Minister for Youth. In the past year, the youth service has continued to reach out to our community. The service has increased its face-to-face work and has reached out to other government departments, agencies, and NGOs in order for them to work together to improve services for young people in our community. The youth service is committed to personal professional development and constantly continues to update the skills of all its employees by offering them training. One of the courses the staff experienced was a very successful and inspiring day of personal professional development training that focused on personal well-being at work. Safeguarding children and young people is paramount, and the youth service is part of the Child Protection Commission. The youth service has increased its commitment to support the child protection in Gibraltar. Mr. Speaker, the youth service will continue to work towards forms of safety models by being committed to making a multi-agency approach in managing safeguarding issues and placing the welfare of young people at the heart of everything that they do. One of our senior youth workers is a member of the Safeguarding Children's subgroup and a trainer for the multi-agency team. We can now say that all those working with children and young people go through a stringent process of vetting and training. The youth service will continue to provide projects to all clients that attend the class. Projects that develop young people's artistic, photographic, and film skills. Programs which involve residential camps. These camps develop a great number of life skills and enable young people to disconnect from technology-driven, modern-day society. To this end, the youth service has organized a great number of camps in the hinterland, where they have enjoyed outdoor education with a back to nature theme, exploring and learning about the wilderness, bushcraft, nature, and survival. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the Youth Foundation for helping funding these trips. On their return, young people who attend give a presentation to the trustees of the Youth Foundation, highlighting the impact and the benefits of the trip to them. The Youth Service is also involved with the community by participating in our annual cavalcade and producing service, by getting involved in the Clean Up the World campaign, and by helping on Thread Day by raising funds for charity. The Youth Advisory Council has been expanded to include the RDP, the Education Department, the GHA, the Care Agency, and the Drug Coordinator. This aims to develop a more coordinated approach between government departments and agencies when dealing with young people's issues. The first ever Youth Day was celebrated in March this year. This new initiative jointly organized between the Youth Service and the Devote Council of Services as part of the Youth Art Jamboree Month. It is a day to celebrate young people's achievements and for them to see what is on offer to develop themselves as individuals. The focus for next year's event will center on forming a working group comprised of young people to make all the decisions and events planning for their day. that was vital. We can talk and we know in how to move forward. We need by them to the voice of young people. They are currently working on a directory for young people for them to know where they can source different services. This voice for young people does two things. Firstly, as the name now suggests, it gives young people a voice. A voice in which they can say and bring up whatever subject or concern they may have. Secondly, it gives me and others present in the meeting an opportunity to understand their concerns. The government can then solve of the problems that they are encountering or implement their suggestions, which in most cases are sensible and most importantly are feasible. Mr. Speaker, ever since the youth service and the Royal Devotion Police signed the memorandum of understanding, both organizations have built and established a professional relationship of trust. They have made significant progress in many areas that have improved our service to the young people and the community. As an example, a significant number of people have benefited from the RDP joint funding through the Therapy Committee of Residential Weekend Award. This will be held in October, and it will allow young people to build positive relationships with their neighborhood police officers and with the youth workers. The youth community workers have also supported the RDP, new recruits, by providing training regarding working with young people in our community. I am happy to say also, Mr. Speaker, that the Girl Guide Hub at the Nature Reserve is nearing completion. This conference center will be a great asset for the Girl Guides who do an extremely invaluable work with young girls. This project has been in the pipeline for nearly 16 years, which has been presented to the previous administration, and they did not think it as a worthwhile project. We will continue supporting groups that work with young people, as do with the Duke of Zimbabwe, Scouts, and now we have added the St. John Ambulance. The support is in the form of an annual grant, which gives them for the extra annual grant given to them for the extra work they do. Mr. Speaker, I now move on to my responsibility as Minister for Sport. As far as known, the Devoted Sports and Leisure Authority is tasked with the running of all sports-related matters. This includes the management of the Bayside Sports Complex, the swimming pools, playgrounds, and parks. Parts of the Bayside Complex have been sold to the GFA in order for them to develop the national stadium. The GFA will retain the hockey pitch, the Texas Community Hall, and all the pieces and grounds west of the complex, which includes the boathouse, the Patrick Tennis Court, the Tennis Court, the jet ski enclosure, the climbing wall, and the Stairway Center. A program of upgrading and refurbishment has been taking place. The hockey pitch, for example, the watering system, has been malfunctioning for an extended period of time, and this resulted in increased water consumption. So investigations and upgrades were approved. This included the reconfiguration of the system's overflow and return valves to include the recycling capacity of the tanks. It also included the installation of new dosing pumps to sterilize the water covered recovered from the pitches themselves. These works were completed in August 2017, and it has resulted in a total saving of £30,010 to 46 up to and including the 31st of March 2018. Aside from the obvious monetary savings, the system now recycles approximately 65% of the water and is in line with the government's green policy. Mr. Speaker, all three federal tennis courts have undergone a substantial upgrade. All three received new artificial turf, a much-needed lighting system, and installation of competition-graded perimeter fencing. The advice and suggestions of regular users were taken on board. This is one of the Japanese most popular facilities, and it has now increased in popularity further still as a result of the investment undertaken. The boat house, which now houses the Island Games 2019 office, was given a much needed facelift. It is now used regularly by many associations and has become the hub of the organization of the Island Games. The current red metal girders and fencing at the front of the 13-year-old spectator stand rendered the first four or five rows unusable as this test offered extremely restricted viewing. These will be replaced by appropriate glass paneling, ensuring that spectators will have full unrestricted view in future. At the swimming pool, all works at the plant room are now complete, and the modernization of the system has meant that there is no longer need for a weekly outsourcing of dock water, chemical level control, and other related tasks. The existing maintenance agreement was therefore no longer required, resulting in a savings of £65,000 per annum. In addition, extra savings have been experienced through the reduction in chemical consumption, which is approximately 50%, water consumption, approximately 40%. In effect, this means that the capital expenditure required for the upgrade has been addressed. As with every financial year, the parks and playgrounds under the Gateway Arena have continued to receive relevant repairs and upgrades. The playgrounds are still in course by the estate and the Putnam Racing major upgrade. The GSLA team are also constantly fixing and maintaining all the park equipment on a rolling basis. Given the recent sales to the Victoria Stadium, of the Victoria Stadium, in particular the Victoria Stadium Sports Hall, there is a need to provide a second covered area in the Bayside Sports Complex to meet the regulation in order to host international netball events. The provision of a cover over the multi-use game area, MUGA, will not only address this issue, but will provide an extra indoor area for all users during the normal wet autumn and winter months. Works are already started on providing the Gibraltar Cricket Association with outdoor cricket nets. These will be retractable in nature and will make use of an area that was currently used for storage. This facility will replace the old permanent nets which now lie within the footprint zone of the Gibraltar Football Association. The fact that the nets are retractable will mean that the GSLA gains an extra facility to use for schools, associations, and other communities use as a facility. The GSLA management will continue to concern regarding the staffing levels at the GSLA swimming pool complex. After an extensive review of the swimming pool complex, it was decided to move to a 3-6 system. Therefore, the GSLA opened two vacancies at grade 5 pool manager initially. These vacancies were identified internally with two sports and leisure officers as the successful applicants. All other vacancies for pool operators, lifeguard grade 13, were also identified as the standard protocol regarding recruitment from within HMDOG agencies, authorities, and supply workers. The result of the recruitment is that the facilities have now moved to a 7-day-week offering and extended services to the general public. The HMDOG, via the GSLA, have been involved in all the events held at the complex, both at the logistical as well as at the financial level. These include the UEFA Football International Masters, the Gibraltar World Pool Masters 2018, World Pool at Gibraltar Open 2018, Euro Hockey Club Challenge 2 Men, to name but a few. In addition, the GSLA offers logistical support and facilities for local sports associations to complete their league and development program. This support is offered throughout the year. It also assists schools in fulfilling their PE placement both at the Bayside Complex and at yesterday's Olympic Complex. The Summer Sports and Leisure Program 2017 once again proved on its previous year's attendance. 527 children were registered, with the main arm of the program, namely the Sports Train and Stay Program. The Sports Train offers sporting and leadership activities every weekend or a weekday morning for 7 to 14 year olds. The Children's Corner offered appropriate sports and recreational activities 3 days a week for 5 to 6 year olds. The Family Evening Sessions noticed a marked improvement in attendance, with sessions affecting groups totaling 80 plus locations. The Stay and Play program offered sports, physical, arts, and leisure activities for children with disabilities 5 days a week. This element is particularly needed to view its rescheduling given the significantly higher attendance, and with this in mind, the temporary staff complement has been increased for this upcoming program. In addition, the care agency was actively involved in the induction training program for 2017, adding to the quality of delivery while safeguarding the interests of leaders and users alike. The DSLA also worked in partnership with sports associations, 27 in total, to provide a wide range of sporting coaches, courses, and coaching sessions for children and young people. Other positive measure providers also contributed to the program. These being the Ministry for Culture, the Ministry for Heritage, the Ministry for Environment, the Devoter Authorities, the Devoter, the King Captain of the Center, the Childline Devoter, the German Ambulance, and the Devoter Kennel Club. That is an success for the program that the sponsorship arrangement with NatWest has been extended. Mr. Speaker, I am very glad to report that NatWest will again be supporting the program during 2018. The program for 2018 was only launched last week. The government is grateful to NatWest for their continued support. Once again, Eastern government has supported local sports association athletes when traveling abroad to participate in official international competitions. This has been done by the Sports Advisory Council. In addition, those development initiatives were also supported. More so than many other years, and given the uncertainty the investment conveyed, special consideration was given to attendance at congresses and annual general meetings. Active involvement in the dealings of international governing bodies has and will become one of the most important aspects of international relations. As per the previous financial year, individuals who present cases for financial support under the elite category have been supported after applications were considered on a case-by-case basis. As Minister for Leisure, another of my responsibilities is that of Key Structural Leisure Centre. I am happy that after 3 years being run by Leisure Management Services, the centre has gone through great improvement. They have managed to maintain the revenue of 2017 very much the same as 2016, with significant increases in the business gym. This is due to the fact that it's well maintained and well run on a commercial basis. The fitness gym and the recreational rooms are now five feeding panels installed, as the paint usually used to flake off during the dampness. The revenues are the same despite the fact that membership fees are well below the market value. The gains I've seen during the last 3 years a vast improvement in both sales and the quality of the equipment. Several new arcade machines were installed, including the virtual reality screen wide simulator. A very large LED panel screen, 15 meters long, by 2.2 need to hire, but to install the better bowling lanes, to advance the area, and also to generate additional revenue from advertising for 2018. By having a full-time maintenance team, many improvements to the center can be achieved. They have had to do a considerable amount of painting and repainting because of the historical nature of the building. Mr. Speaker, when the center was built under the previous administration, there were hardly any environmental considerations. Through the manner and form of the construction, so much that the government doesn't do it better for the environment. This means that the electricity costs are exorbitant. I know the honourable members don't want to hear it. So that then, glass panels to the roof were fitted with some reflective screens to help keep the temperature lower, particularly during the summer months, and also to save on air conditioning electricity costs. Other parts of the roof have been replaced due to the poor original design, which has given the center problems for many years. An automatic glass door was put into the entrance of the panel. New LED lighting was installed on some of the arcade posts as well as a LED strip to indicate leading to the Commonwealth Park that the entrance is more appealing. In 2009, the center's main project was to replace all of the bowling equipment, including print sessions, setups, bowl returns, lanes, new scoring system, with a brand new equipment ahead of next year's Army Games. All the costs are factored into the legacy of the Army Games project. We will also be installing a cashless card system, whereby visitors to the center will be able to use the card, which will be credit as one of our on-site kiosks. They will then be able to pay for all the services that we offer with the same card. This includes the arcade machine and the counter in the bowling, fitness gym, and the ice cream. All be fitted with readers. All our entities at the center are doing well. Bowling is now a great place for function. Just for kids is becoming even ever more popular, and the local cinemas are not only bringing the latest films to the screen, but it is also having live performances from the parts of London theatre. We are therefore hopeful that in the next 2 to 3 years, the upward trend will continue. For this, I would like to thank the management of LMS and all its workforce who have really made the difference. They have contributed to its success. Thank you too to the entities that are part of the centre, like Boyd, like Rob Hoffman, like the Melbourne Cinema, for being able to work together for the good of the centre as a whole. I propose to start my summary of all the talent and going to what is being done in the preparation for the 2019 Iron Games. I would like to take this opportunity to welcome the International Iron Games Association Committee and all the delegates from all the 24 islands that will be with us the next 4 days for their annual general meeting. When I first thought of presenting to Cabinet the prospect for hosting the Iron Games, the operative word that came to my mind was legacy. This is how the London Games was sold to the citizens there. So the honourable member probably doesn't agree there about the legacy. But never mind, he can have his laugh. He will laugh back. I'm obviously very grateful to all my government colleagues who have embraced the concept and are actively working to be able to fulfill this goal. This is a collective goal. And never in the history of Gibraltar has a government invested so much born again. Yes, there will be disruptions due to construction and preparation for games, and even due to the actual game. But in the long run, this will be good for the daughter. I can inform this house that all the 40 projects are on budget and on time. And lastly, we have a football rugby pitch and an athletic playing track and field facility, a 54-meter Olympic style swimming pool, and parking space and stores underneath the whole of the complex. At the other end, we will have a multi-purpose hall as big as the 13-meter hall of the baseball complex. We will also have football, a dance arena, indoors, as well as dormitories for visiting teams. There will be treatment, changing rooms, changing and conference rooms, as well as bars, cafeterias, and facilities. This will be the home of rugby, chess, cricket, and bass. It will be used by all indoor sports, such as netball, basketball, football, badminton, table tennis, etc. The Special Olympic Complex, which is one which is dear to my heart, so much for not looking after the library. This complex will transform for many reasons. It's transformational for many reasons. We are looking at facilities which will be fully inclusive in every way. We aim, the aim is also to provide self-employment there. And the complex will have the state-of-the-art facilities for all. The shooting range, the North Mall, together with offices, car parking, stores, fences, is progressing well. These will be also the state-of-the-art facilities, which will be ready for our hiring days, which will continue to be used for many years into the future. The student accommodation, as you all proposed, which I am leading on, is on track. Again, this will not only be used for the team, but will be used in the future for students at the university, which is directly next door. Mr. Speaker, the government strongly wants to be positive and to invest in the well-being of our community. This is what we are doing by hosting the Island Games in Gibraltar next year. The benefits are huge. From the outset, we focus on delivering the best Island Games ever. When I traveled to other such games over the years, I have been stopped and praised by people who remember the Sunshine Games that we both hosted in 1995. Hosting an Island Games is a great honor, and I can see now that the response that I have had today from everyone in our community has been really exceptional. Not so exceptional on my side, I might add. The committee, the members of the Gibraltar Island Games Association committee are giving of their own time and expertise to organize the best games ever. They are using the model of the charity game. That's the first thing they did was to form a company which would be managed by and run by the GIGA, the Gibraltar Island Games Association. The company now employs full-time employees, the chief executive officer, team director, and the logistic and planning director. Further, we have a number of subcommittees who are dealing with all aspects of the organization. These include finance, legal, accommodation, transport, volunteers, commercial operations, security, games operations, ceremonies, media. Such subcommittees have a team that works on their own window. They report on a regular basis to the company. We also have a regular meeting with all collectively to coordinate with each other. I would like to at this point to highlight that all the members of the subcommittee are doing this work on a purely voluntary basis. On behalf of the government, I would like to thank them all. The Island Games Office of the Sports Conference, the heart of of all the organization of the game. Things are moving very well and at a fast pace. I am extremely happy at how everything is coming together on the organizational aspect. I have thanked everyone for the work they have done. I have thanked everyone for the work they are doing. However, I must single out one person for a special thank you. And that person is Linda Allen. She has put her organizational skills and expertise to bear with me. I would also like to tell to all our citizens that soon we will be launching a number of initiatives in relation to the game. The mission belongs to all of us. We must all take on ownership of the Island Games. We will be asking for all individuals to show what they are really made of as a community and to engage in whichever form they feel they can contribute. The game should bring us all closer together. The benefit of the game goes to the Mr. Speaker, it will showcase the growth of as a forward-looking society and it will expose the beauty of our country. It will also benefit our economy, due to the fact that we will have 2,500 active coaches and officials in our schools for at least 8 days. All our businesses and commercial entities will benefit. Many of us will enjoy the sporting program that will be that we intend to put on during the evening. All of the work we are doing to create this competition will not only be in brick and mortar in the form of potential, but it will also take the form of an industry. This sporting industry can be developed further by having games, the games once we have the games, the facilities are in place. We are already working at using these wonderful facilities, but that sporting teams to come to the world. We want them here not only to compete against us in tournaments, but also to take time training and preparing themselves for the professional arena. Gibraltar will be well placed to attract this sort of market. This will then be a win-win situation, since we will not only help them to spend time and money here, we will also be able to learn from them as to the training schedule, nutritional aspects, and lifetime of a professional sports person. I will end by saying to everyone in Gibraltar, let's get involved in the game and be part of it. Mr. Speaker, I want to close my address here by saying thank you. I would like to thank all members of the Youth Advisory Council. The Youth Forum now means the voice of the young people. The Gibraltar Sports Advisory Council. All the cultural groups from art, drama, photography, and dance potential. Thank you also to all the members of the governing bodies of the sport who are involved in delivering the state of the art facilities, which will leave a lasting legacy well after the Island Games have passed. I am grateful to the organizing committee of the Island Games, who do this without any financial interest. The team at OTS and at Ophelia that are producing all the architectural and technical designs for all the sporting and cultural projects with which I am involved. Thanks to all those technical service who helped me steer these projects. Thanks to all those to the staff of the Gibraltar Cultural Services at the Gibraltar Academy of Music and Performing Arts, at the Leisure Management Services at King Boston Leisure Center, at the Sports and Media Authority, at CBC, and last but not least, at the Youth Service. Mr. Speaker, thanks to you, who started the Parliament, and last and definitely, by no means least, my staff at the Ministry for Culture, without whom I would not be able to implement all the positive policies and my special commitments to which I am involved. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Edwin Reddy.
vote of any football teams having to go over into Spain in order to be able to train in preparation for local and international matches. Indeed, more facilities are very much needed if we are to continue to aspire to getting onto second rounds at the end of the qualification stages in respect of the Europa Champions League and the Europa League itself. The group team continues to believe that alongside the new upgrade of facilities which can still be enjoyed by the football fraternity, there is still a great need for extensive training facilities in Gibraltar to cater for participants at all levels and in numerous sports. These resources and facilities should ensure that the introduction and development of our youngsters into the world of sport, the lessons arising from our school curriculum and supporting to our commitment, are equally catered for. It is the duty of the Gibraltar Sports and Leisure Authority to make these facilities available for our general public at large who wish to participate in sporting activities. The £15 million, which become available to governments from the premium paid by the GSA, will be used widely and in close consultation with all relevant sporting bodies across the board. This will ensure, as far as legally possible, that the Volta continues to produce well-regarded athletes and develop its wide-ranging sporting talent. Often, with the fact which makes many of our sporting opponents in official competitions envious of our rather consistent good results. Many of the returners are currently heavily involved in carefully planned training sessions with the aspiration of proudly representing the Volta at the 2019 Ireland Games, which will, for the second time in the game's history, be held in Gibraltar. I'm sure I can speak for the whole house, as we offer our collective best wishes to all forthcoming participants who, through their collective efforts, will hopefully yet again make us proud of our ongoing sporting fraternity. New sporting facilities are currently under construction in the Spain by Minister and planned to be completed in time for the 2019 Ireland Games. These facilities will serve Gibraltar beyond the Ireland Games itself, and therefore it is essential that full consultation takes place with the pertinent sports government body to ensure that both the present and immediate future needs of the sporting fraternity are met. The old Victoria Stadium sports hall now comes under lease purchase from the GSA, so it is essential that facilities here to be provided under this roof are re-provided in convenient locations. The second training sports hall itself has over the recent past proved extremely useful and popular to many sports participants, and I wish the same degree of success in respect to the new facilities to be built. It is of utmost importance that the needs of sports participants are met in the new facilities being built without cutting any corners. With your leave, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to repeat an offer I made last year, as well as the year before that, during the budget debate. Although I am a firm believer that individual sports governing bodies should be allowed to manage their own affairs with no political interference, I want to then urge the Minister for Sport, in his capacity as chairman of the Sports and Leisure Authority, to take a particular interest to ensure that publicly owned facilities are used in a fair manner for the benefit of all sports lovers. There is both a duty and a moral obligation for the sports authority to ensure that, where desired by a club or individual citizen, membership in the relevant local governing body is open to all in an equal and fair manner. I offer myself to put down and discuss with the Minister for Sport possible avenues which may be looked into in order to set up a separate independent body tasked with matters pertaining to and requiring arbitration related to local sporting issues. Some disputes have been dragging on for far too long, and now I'm grateful that by working together with all affected parties, the solution can and should be found. I wish to reaffirm my personal convictions that through the collective celebration of social events, participating Gibraltarians contribute towards reinforcing our identity, culture, and history as a people and a community. Both the performing and finite fraternities always prove themselves to be very productive within their own
congratulate all the groups and individuals who have done Gibraltar extremely proud in their international participations and, I'm pleased to say, in numerous cases, even getting top awards. It is always a personal and collective pleasure to be able to say how proud we are of the international achievements of our fellow dignitaries. During the last 7 months, government searches both the Queen's cinema and the Queen's Hotel site for the development of the theatre and related activities. There are somewhat mixed feelings among the local community as to how these sites will be developed and at what cost. Government announced in 2015 election manifesto that a lot of progress on the design of the new Queen's National Theatre has been made in order to make the old Queen's cinema a venue for touring productions. It went on to say that now that the new preliminary land use design has been finalized, they will continue to work with the Committee of Local Drama Experts to finalize the internal design and facilities required, alongside exploring the possibility of commercial use of the theater of their facilities. This now seems to be yet another matter which still remains to be addressed shortly, whenever shortly may be. Could it be that after such a short period of inactivity, the Committee of Local Drama Experts no longer exists? Government has set aside the use in this year's estimate £12.1 million in order to subsidize a 3-day mega concert. However, the first outturn for us here in respect of this event has turned out to be £4.4 million, and it is now confirmed that we have a total expenditure of £3,485,441 for 2016 and 2017. Given the cost of running the mega concert over the last 2 years, I would like to know how this year it is estimated it would cost slightly less than half of what the 2017 mega concert turned out to be. But coming back to the Queen Cinema site, I sincerely hope that the development of this site will be a real value for money and that our local culture in the widest sense of the word is enhanced. Local performers may often be hard to say that if we can afford so many millions for the 2-day event, then surely our local performers, entertainers, and audiences are entitled to ask for a theatre which is fit for purpose and available throughout the year. It is clear. Moving on now into educational matters. I wish to start by citing some of the things I really recently came across. It says, children must be able to play, study, and grow in a peaceful environment. Woe to anyone who stifles their joyful impulse to hope. With this in mind, Mr. Speaker, I cannot stress enough and enough the need to ensure we get it absolutely right when planning and building facilities which will serve our children's educational purposes in preparation for adult life. Much as we said in the special government project for the reprovision and expansion of our school buildings. For our pupils' benefit, I wish to recommend that the system is taken, or to be taken shortly, should be based above all upon feedback received from the professionals in the field, namely classroom teachers themselves. Unfortunately, very recently, in fact, a month ago, the Gibraltar Teachers Association highlighted that to date they have felt ignored and not consulted on the majority of the educational reforms that the Department of Education has embarked on. Teachers who wish to bring closure to the new school building event stressed that they continue to disagree with the project, citing the high levels of congestion in the water potable, the difficulty in evacuating the building in case of an emergency, the potential for unhealthy competition between the schools, difficulty in behavior management and pastoral care, bullying, etc., are issues of great concern which the hope the government considers carefully in order to mitigate potential negative impact that co-location may have on the education and well-being of pupils. Through feedback received from teachers, I fully empathize with the frustration very little information has put the time to them on planning for allowing students to introduce vocational education and provide a co-educational environment in the secondary sector. I look forward to seeing how Minister for Education, whom I told as well there have been an important discussion between ministry and teachers, and I sincerely hope he will address this issue in the immediate future with a view to making a money. Given that teachers have reinforced the need for the importance of vertical communication on the current and future reforms in education, I sincerely hope that their voices are heard in the vision being acted upon by government if to succeed. Again, I fully empathize with the teaching profession who, on the issue of co-location, feel a golden opportunity has been lost to explore different models within the constraints of the land available to achieve an optimum educational solution. Teachers feel that the issue is not just about what is being provided, but about what could have been provided as a being more meaningful consultation with classroom teachers themselves. As both a teacher and a vice president of the Georgia Teachers Association, and someone who follows educational matters extremely close to his heart, I stand a recommendation to the Minister for Education to listen to and work as closely as possible with classroom teachers, albeit alongside his management teams. Classroom teachers want to be part of any process that changes our education system, as well as to be involved in meaningful consultation before final decisions are taken. Surely, the way forward proposed by these professionals can only but contribute to well-being and best possible future of our children. This is something which I hope we can all agree is paramount. Given through their latest feedback, the Teachers Association claims that we know that the present and majority of the members would be in favor of two stages of amendments to coincide with the year in which pupils are scheduled to move from lower to upper primary and likewise from upper primary to secondary schools. These new amendments seem to make logical sense in respect of providing teaching and learning resources which the schools necessarily require. I would like to take this opportunity to also recommend to the Minister that in their plans for building and resourcing a new school, careful consideration be given to current trends in respect of development in school curriculums. I want to take the duty to recommend to the Minister that in their plans for building and resourcing a new school, careful consideration be given to common trends in respect of developments in the school curriculums. An example of this, Mr. Speaker, is a recent initiative already taken by one of our locally based primary schools, which now offers computer science at both GCSE and O levels. It is courses like these which will serve to prepare today's pupils to become a skilled workforce which the world will need tomorrow. Indeed, the future will be dominated by digital technology. Likewise, Mr. Speaker, the GSE has in the past raised the concept of modern apprenticeships, and we still believe we need to offer more in this field than what we currently provide. Those people who do not wish to pursue an academic future need to be provided with the opportunity of a modern apprenticeship program, which is properly structured as the same standing of higher education. We need to create a gold standard for an apprenticeship program so that employers have confidence in the system. The time for investment is now, Mr. Speaker, but not just in formal academic education leading towards entry into higher education, but also in the coordination of training and skills through vocational courses that carry international accreditation. Mr. Speaker, desiring only the very best in respect of the forthcoming educational reforms, I cannot but end by reinforcing that the views of the professionals in this field must be heard and acted upon. There is no better formula for success than to cultivate a sense of ownership among all parts with the education of our children. Before I begin, Mr. Speaker, I, like many others, wish
humble people. Of course, he knows that all of them members of the forest have not even been born. Yes? We, as we are students, young, naive, learn to learn from evergreen, talking to the teacher, and the teacher, and first of all, personalize, take value for all the careful and patient advice that you offer. If a teacher has a minister for mainly the leader of the local delegation in the city, as I already mentioned yesterday, we want to thank our honorary secretary, Mr. Paul Martinez. He is very patient. The way he prepares our power arrangements, the way he puts up with our needs, quite often working against the clock. But it's been a real pleasure that members of both parts of the house have been able to work together in Congress and in the association matters. And I've always been a pleasure to support the urban delegation, whoever that person may be at that time, to put forward and gain international Congress support in our aspirations for justice in the nation. And above all, I think it's a good impact by next door neighbors. So, Mr. Speaker, I hope that the next few years will see us growing in success in the CPA. We have hosted CPA conference board before, and I believe the Honourable Lady may soon be able to announce that perhaps there may be other minor CPA things happening. If that is the case, then we can rest assured of our support. And then, Mr. Speaker, when you come down to led by our members of CPA, I'm sure the club would like to join them. I mean, we have been through two things together. The Honourable Lady and I have good now riding in the tuk-tuk in Bangladesh. But we've also had that moment when we've been riding the streets of Cameroon. But it's all part and parcel of the day. I was able to find it in
I wonder whether we might make that for something else to allow Mr. Elliott and Mr. Huckles to take an apple to their teacher. For most people, to catch up on this morning, but definitely to this panorama, which will help to put in context the next couple of hours of the debate.
That has been recessed for some 20 minutes.
Well, Mr. Speaker, it's the first time that I'm ready to appeal from both sides of the House. Mr. Speaker, this is going to be my 11th budget consecutive speech, Mr. Speaker. I have delivered to Gibraltar's First Minister for Justice, one as Deputy Leader of my party, and five as the Majesty's Leader of the Opposition. It has been a great privilege for me to have been able to serve the people of Gibraltar during that time, and I want to thank everyone who during that time has helped me in my political journey over those and previous years, including those that have done so from an apolitical perspective, that is public servants in departments that I have served, and of course, members of
always been tremendous resources, Mr. Speaker. Many thanks for the day, Mr. Speaker, to you, with the exchange that we have had, have been almost unenjoyable, Mr. Speaker. I like to think we have a special relationship.
Thank you.
years, Mr. Speaker. Over the years, the experts are the leader of the opposition.
Talking about
not looking to the very principles and the very life of the speaker, the father of it for this kind of such a leader of the position in my many criticisms of the government, in the time for the other delivering speeches from this kind of the house. And that, Mr. Speaker, because that's the most effective and general and gentleman of the father of the house. Because that is not incompatible with this event, I want to thank the Chinese. I have a good friend of mine, and I am not going to do for 5 minutes, Mr. Speaker. I am going to, I thank you for you, I have to rewrite my speech, Mr. Speaker. I have not to be far more detailed in the criticism of the government that I would have otherwise done. What I want to do, Mr. Speaker, is to train today. government to deal with the money in the revolver savings bank. The government has the commitment, the government is spending it. No money. And the question is what is that the government's card needs money to spend. And I must say that every time that a government developer was a problem so that that money could then be reinvested into the revolver savings bank, it involves a reduction in tax reserve of the government. So, if you have a venture holder of a government developer to the value of £40,000, no doubt to serve the revolver savings bank, it involves a dual process. The first one, the government went out of its own money. £8,000 to the venture holder. That is money that is owned by the government to the venture holder. He then transferred that money into the revolver savings bank. But to do that, every single time there is a transfer, there is also an equal reduction in the tax reserve of the government. And in this, Mr. Speaker, that's why at the same time the government was reducing gross public debt by transferring and converting government debentures, which is over 75 debentures, the reserve went down from 234 million in December 2011 to 26 million in March 2013 and 73.2 million in March 2015. Not all of that is going to be explained by the transfer of those debentures, but certainly a large part of it, Mr. Speaker. And the consequence of that, Mr. Speaker, was that the government also had less capacity to borrow, because it will be recalled that at the time our net debt, the debt limit of this community, the government debt limit, was pegged to net debt, Mr. Speaker, as a proportion of recurrent revenue. So every time that the government takes its profit and pays out of its cash reserve for a government debenture that has to be transferred into the revolver savings bank, it could be a case of increasing net debt and demanding that the government was nearer to the legal borrowing limit, Mr. Speaker. And indeed, throughout 2013-14 and 15, the government was dangerously close to the legal borrowing limit. So the government, the consequence of its policy, didn't have the country in the bank. They didn't. It had accentuated a problem with cash in the bank. So it didn't have the capacity to borrow to pay for its manifest economy. So what the government did was borrow to go to the bank in March 2012, taking out the requirement that all investments in the devoted savings bank be limited to cash deposits or loan equivalent. In other words, from 2012, the cost of the debentures with the devoted savings bank had to be invested in cash or loan equivalent. Very same form of investment, Mr. Speaker. And as a consequence of the amendment that the Honourable Gentleman made, which we oppose on the side of the House, the bank is in the bank of interest, or the purchase thereof, could be invested in anything, Mr. Speaker. And what I wrote already, Mr. Speaker, but finally, in 2013, the fact that the government was giving itself up to use the purchase of the revolver savings bank of interest to pay for its manifesto promises, or at least government expenditure, what I didn't know until days before the 2013 by-election was that the government had only changed the law, and not only changed the law, but set up a company called Credit Finance Company Limited, into which it caused the Devoted Savings Bank to pay £400 million, Mr. Speaker, which was then used to pay for the community pensions of civil servants, to loan to third parties, and in other things which have traditionally been an expense of the government. And what is the power of
systems that were paid to civil servants. Which were very bold in the last few years. And of course, it does, Mr. Speaker. But if an invitation of civil servants is expected by the government, how would it otherwise be requested in the estimate of revenue and expenditure if the government had taken the decision to allocate for the finance company limited to that country?
We only found out, It was nothing of the 4th of the speaker. But from 2016,
collected $447 million. That collected $772 million worth of government-owned companies that matter. With the government debt, there is no debt. I don't know what the people of the world. They are paying debt to this community. The debt is. Then the world finds behind the bear of one of the things that I heard behind him. He says, what do you think of that? And he says that the legal debt is $447. And the guy, technically, adopted Mr. Speaker. The way he took away the technically adopted is not the person. But it's not my guess that the world is truly fair. But the world is truly fair.
Pointed out that there have been 10 briefings
continuation to the Brexit or the opposite. I don't think I recognize that. I don't think I recognize the city of Edinburgh for any doubt, Mr. Speaker. But the government is doing all it can in a very difficult situation, and I hope that as we recognize that, they would also recognize that if we had been on the other side of the house, we would, in our own way, have done exactly the same. In other words, done whatever we can in order to safeguard the position of the community. But, Mr. Speaker, there is a significant difference between how we would have approached it and how they have approached it. Because although that they have voted on 10 separate occasions in relation to what they are doing in relation to Brexit, that is a far cry, Mr. Speaker, to what they should have done in the public interest, which should have been to work with the opposition to benefit the community. In 2013, when I first became leader of the opposition, the way that I went first, I asked the
to do is to make sure that the Thank you.
done by this new approach to
enforcement. The last time that I asked there was a question in the South, when there were tenfold increases in appeal to the court from the decision of the Divorce Financial Service Commission.
to make a living somewhere else. We won't. What I want to see is all the federal regulations that does not discourage investment for those existing operators pushing that place in the market, which is what the feedback, Mr. Speaker, that I am receiving about this new investment policy on behalf of the industry. Mr. Speaker, I am really grateful to the staff and to you, Mr. Speaker, for the indulgence that your team, Mr. Speaker, has given me and to reply to some of the minister's offices and their interventions. And then I want to thank everybody in this parliament, the public servants in this parliament, Mr. Speaker, for all the hard work that they do in making sure that we are properly taken care of. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Marlene Hassanel.
Mr. Speaker, I want to address the House to deliver my speech in my third year as an independent member of this House. I would like to start off by thanking you, Mr. Speaker, for your frequent direction and attention whenever I have needed guidance, which has always been a great comfort to me in view of the fact that I work alone in this House and usually need more steering than other members who enjoy a party structure and the mentoring of a seasoned leader. I also take this opportunity to thank the wonderful staff here in this House who are always readily available to help me with whatever I need. Francis, Kevin, Daniel, led by Paul Martinez. Thank you all, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it has been common for the proper speeches in our esteemed House to be read out in a rote manner, with all the figures of balances and increases or decreases in funding, etc., being presented in a matter of fact manner. However, Mr. Speaker, these figures and percentages often miss the reality of what is truly happening in our so-called robust economy. I have often said, and now more often, for many of my constituents, both local business persons and individuals, that there are areas of the economy that have been forgotten and issues within the economy that need addressing. Let me start, Mr. Speaker, with the lack of an overall strategy. To be honest, this comment would require a review of our economy over the last 20 years and its transformation from energy based to finance and gaming based. But I will summarize by saying that given the changing priorities of both private companies and global organizations like the OECD, truly our dependence on the above mentioned pillars of our economy urgently needs reviewing. What has been needed and is needed now is a multifaceted strategy that looks to the future of work and technology and why these two will be impacted over the years to come. It is also crucial to conduct a study of diverging Gini coefficient to get a clearer picture of the inequalities of this economy. With the announcement of GDP per capita of $111,000, just under 85,000 GBP, our growth is commendable. However, when the minimum wage is roughly £14,000 per annum, that questions the true equality of our economy. The GDP is set up by a minority of extremely wealthy individuals we must know. We will not get a true reflection of the state of our economy until we are aware of how to fix this income inequality. Equally, it is important to identify areas which will give us sustainable and secure source of income and will not run into the future. You would think a socialist government, Mr. Speaker, would be interested in levels of inequality and planning ahead for the economy of the next generation. At present, Mr. Speaker, this is not evident. As for public expenditure, Mr. Speaker, where does one begin? The last 6 years have seen unprecedented growth in public expenditure. There are many in our society aware that our present government is the source of increasing business and trade, and has spoken to many who raise their concerns. Can seeing that government last year, and this year once again, increased the personal insurance cost by 10% in two consecutive budgets. Questions are being raised as to whether this increase was and is justified in contrast to the inflation rate and also given some of the less essential services that government are currently providing. Most importantly, many have asked as to the government-owned companies that are now playing ever-increasing roles in some sectors. I will refer to TWS, Mr. Speaker. The company is a fully government-owned company, as I understand it. It was set up by the DOT to carry out construction projects for government when other companies had let the government down. But today, it appears to be a company that works for the private sector as well, and this appears to give them an unfair advantage over other competitors. That is just one of the government-owned companies I mentioned, Mr. Speaker. There are others. In the latest figures, we can see that there seems to be an annual recurring funding of government-owned companies to the tune of $25 million. I understand that how this is distributed is not fully laid out in government estimates. On page 165, there is only a single line referring to this amount. Will the public at large know where and how the money, their money, is being allocated in this matter? Going down in the line of government expenditure, it also appears that there are some areas where priorities are lacking. Mr. Speaker, our postal services are now costing the public cost in the region of £9 million per annum. In most countries, the postal service actually makes a profit. In contrast, our tax office is not seen as a surplus, considering the vital role it plays in our public funding, only receives over £2 million. And of course, there are stories of how many individuals are now receiving assessments from over 5 years ago, and given sometimes a month to come up with any shortfall, and face fines in the event that these amounts are not paid on time. As to those fortunate enough to receive a rebate, where they have had to wait similar times for these funds to be returned. Often, it is the most needy of our citizens who pay for the shortfall, Mr. Speaker. I must also mention one other area, Mr. Speaker, that troubled me and has come to light recently, and that is the recurring cost of the phone service. I know that we have a dedicated team of officers taking care of our prisoners. However, many of our prisoners have been interned for unfounded petty crimes. At present, there are about 55 to 60 prisoners, and the cost of keeping them there is this year expected to be just over £3.2 million. Approximately £53,000 per inmate per annum, Mr. Speaker. I believe that this is a rather high figure and would like the opportunity to know more about how we are dealing with this issue, not just on a financial level, but also on a human and compassionate level. Mr. Speaker, I must move on, but these are just a few pointers on the state of public finance that I believe need to be addressed. But I must move on now to three sectors. Turning to construction and housing, Mr. Speaker. I will not bring up the TWS crisis, as I have already mentioned it. I will never ask the issue of how the water is being transformed physically and how the construction industry has of course boomed. There are many reasons for this, and it appears from my understanding that demand for property drinking water are present as just the ground. This has led to a massive increase in development for sales from the mid to upper price bracket that seems to be selling out even before the ink on the sales brochure is growing. However, we are in a crisis. There is a need for social housing as never before, and it is the most vulnerable of developers who are suffering the worst. As an independent MP who juggles all portfolios, I can safely say that 90% of the cases that come to me are coming to me with housing issues. The waiting list for government housing for one bedroom flat is now over 600. Action for Housing has recently made public that some of our most vulnerable elderly members of society will not live long enough to see the day when they will be able to live in a decent home of their own. The rental market of apartments in Gibraltar is closer to London prices. locally than ever before. And there are more crew who want to rent locally and have been forced to find accommodation in nearby Spain. This is part of the massive expenditure on structural projects by the present government. It is time for a serious review, Mr. Speaker. The present housing is in need of review and must not penalize landlords when it comes to social housing. Mr. Speaker, all families of housing are incredibly concerned to hear after a fire in the upper town and an upper town estate that there are no fire retardants in communal areas of government estate. A job which people died in the fire averted the tragedy by announcing the building of the fire. Mr. Speaker, I'm very responsible in Parliament about this, all to no avail. In the wake of Grenfell, Mr. Speaker, I believe we failed to this community to provide the maximum health and safety standards to those residents living in government estates who largely depend on the state for support. We are indebted to them, Mr. Speaker, to fetch them with adequate health and safety measures in communal areas and our own government to reconsider implementing sanctions to our government estates as soon as possible. We cannot touch the lives and the heroism of death to rescue the population of our estates, Mr. Speaker. But back to the budget, Mr. Speaker. The wholesale retail sector of Gibraltar has been a key sector of Gibraltar's economy ever since it provided goods and services to the garrison that was established in the 1700s. It has evolved in one way or another to provide to the local community and also to the visiting tourists. However, there are challenges in this sector, and you have already seen the report made public by the GFSB. In the UK, no dairy goes by without some means of retailers and stables going under. Government would do well to support this sector, Mr. Speaker. Not necessarily with subsidies, but with time and support to ensure that our offering is good for both locals and visitors alike. A review of import duties, the tariffs, and the manner in which they are being collected is well overdue, Mr. Speaker. In addition, our local business entrepreneurs are keen to know that their interests are also being considered when discussing Brexit with the UK, and not just the possible changes that are affecting the finance and perhaps the gaming industry. Mr. Speaker, I know that this government is investing heavily in the DLT blockchain space as a potential area of growth. And of course, when one looks at how exciting this space is on a global level, it is totally understandable. However, it is important that we look into the net benefits for Gibraltar as a whole, in this industry, and not just the privileged few. With this in mind, it would be a good time to make public what the net effects are expected for the local population, and particularly with regard to our well-educated youth demographic, and ensure that there is a level playing field. Mr. Speaker, turning to gaming. The gaming industry appears to have been a boom for Gibraltar, but one of the costs of the gaming industry has been the massive influx of staff from abroad and the subsequent rise in rental rates in Gibraltar, substantially affecting the local population in terms of long or short-term rentals. I alluded to the housing problem we are facing in Gibraltar earlier. This budget fails to implement specific measures to tackle the very unique needs of our economy, particularly with regard to many of the byproducts it creates. Given the income generated from this industry of over £30 million, would it be possible to allocate some of these funds to the building of the much needed one-bedroom homes that our society so desperately needs? Mr. Speaker, turning to the Business Licensing Authority. The Business Licensing Authority was set up in order to regulate and possibly protect the local businesses from unfair competition. It was supposed to do away with the cumbersome and possibly illegal in the eyes of the EU Trade Licensing Authority. From my understanding, it has not been effective in the protection aspect, with many businesses from Spain and other countries able to trade and provide services without the license required. There has also been a lack of regulation and enforcement, from my understanding, Mr. Speaker, and campus for Tech Sampson. I moved from Tech Sampson earlier when I addressed the needs of the task forces and my opinion that it was one department that needed more attention. But I now refer to the tax code, Mr. Speaker. This particularly for the fact of the complexity of the code and the two-tier-based system. Is this two-tiered system still fit for purpose, Mr. Speaker? And if so, how? On another note, in this area, I mentioned the two special tax categories of Class 2 and what. My question, Mr. Speaker, is whether these categories to create work of work for Gibraltar are aware of the benefits being seen. Also, they do not fit for purpose in today's world. Because the world has changed substantially, Mr. Speaker, in terms of financial equality, and so have the public attitudes and perceptions regarding wealth inequality. Mr. Speaker, it is estimated that 1% of the world's population controls over 85% of the world's wealth. In terms of Gibraltar, we cannot escape how the asset-rich individuals are doing well and better as time goes on, as compared to many in Gibraltar who are not doing as well and seem to find no opportunities in this respect. We have in Gibraltar one of the highest GDP per capita, but we need to balance out that most of our current citizens do not currently sit into that higher level. So the question then is, Mr. Speaker, who does? There seems to be no acknowledgement of this reality in the budget or any measures to support this socially pernicious phenomenon. Mr. Speaker, with regards to the environment, I am glad to see that government is giving the environment the attention it deserves and that this year's budget has implemented green measures for our community. I also take this opportunity to thank NGOs like the Motorist Project for raising awareness on the dangers of plastic and lobbying tirelessly in order to influence government to adopt such green incentives. There is no doubt, Mr. Speaker, that their initiatives and achievements have been worthy in this field. However, Mr. Speaker, it is important that the citizens of Gibraltar understand that our economic growth and the unprecedented construction growth come at a price to our environment also. There must come a time when we need to take stock and decide if there is quality in good air, more greenery, and less traffic. As most of you will be aware, not so long ago, a group of people and I founded a political movement together with Gibraltar, based on the premise that we need no engagement from the general public in political affairs. Together Gibraltar has continued bridging this divide between people and power and has proven a very effective tool for youth to take the pulse of the community. The movement has allowed me, in the absence of a party structure, to understand the concerns of many members of our community. And one of the issues that Gibraltarians give most importance to is the quality of our air and the degradation of our environment. After a public meeting with an expert panel, Mr. Speaker, I spent a month in Parliament with a variety of initiatives to improve air quality, alleviate traffic pollution, revamp our waste program, and create a long-term renewable energy plan. I also suggested the creation of a cross-party platform to supervise the overhaul of the environmental agenda, that election cycles and varying manufacturing commitments not deprioritize the issue. Only consistent efforts and parliamentary consensus can guarantee the level of commitment this issue requires. We need the 20 to 30 year vision, Mr. Speaker, the target and governance structures in place such that this remains a priority but never considered in isolation of the economic growth. Mr. Speaker, I am still in discussion with the Minister for the Environment about the motion and will continue to be proactive on the issue. Mr. Speaker, the creation of today's motion is part of my proud contribution to this year to the political landscape, and I say this with joy and an enormous pride in this community. The Western world needs to do more to produce the citizens, especially the young, into having an active role in politics and social issues. And it is proven that influence makes a society better. And while the voice of the economy booms and our GDP grows, our community stagnates in the advancement of the rights of women and minorities.
Thank you. the
morning, I would like to welcome the announcement by the Ministry of Health from working with GHA and all the RS premises locally and from this coming October. And I take this opportunity to implore them for the third or fourth time since our first raise amongst us to make smoking illegal in children's trademark. Mr. Speaker, the illness of toddlers and children picking up cigarette butts from the ground in my sporting story years, as well as the visual of adults smoking in a kid's zone, doesn't escape me. And I will keep reminding this House of the need to enforce legislation to this effect until we achieve it. Mr. Speaker, all of the Honourable Gentlemen and the Minister for Health needs to do on this matter is extend the legislation due to come in October to play back as well as the creation and the ERM. Mr. Speaker, on other notes relating to the Health Ministry, even though it doubles up with transport a little bit, the promised much needed zebra crossing by the hillside residential facility. The people of the water would welcome crossing, and it is imperative that the people of this community should have it easy and safe when crossing to and from visiting their vulnerable family and friends at the hillside residential center. Mr. Speaker, on the education portfolio, it is no secret that on this side of the House, all members agreed with the lack of consultation and communication between government and stakeholders on the very topical subject of the new school, in particular the secondary school. A few months ago, together to go before the public care online to assess the most pressing issues for its members, education is particularly the future of the new clear and comprehensive was by far the most popular option. As of today, Mr. Speaker, many vital issues such as the challenges of two-state realignment, the TLR restructuring, the third structure, and the general logistics of the current resolution remain unanswered. Concerns which could have been made long ago, considering the stage in the construction of the new secondary school. This piece created such a commotion that, as you will recall, Mr. Speaker, in February, the DC and myself joined forces in order to communicate the message loud and clear that opposition was and is united in our concern for the way in which the new school project is conducted, something which I think I can safely say we are all still monitoring closely. Mr. Speaker, teachers have come to us separately, voicing serious grievances with regard to consultation process which is being executed in a fairness and respectful manner. As a result, the collective self focus, ignored, and at times marginalized. Government responded to our grievances by issuing a statement commenting the government, Mr. Speaker, for the open and transparent process of discussion which it was already engaged in with the teaching professionals and support and administrative staff. Mr. Speaker, this lack of empathy, this lack of self-criticism is definitely not conducive to delivering an educational resolution worthy of its name, and I hope there is a clear change of stance that allows for proper consultation going forward on this issue. Because, Mr. Speaker, recognizing the future of our education system and the return on such a massive public investment for the sake of ticking the box of campaign promises is not responsible government, and both the educational professionals and the wider community understand this. Also on education, Mr. Speaker, our special needs education moms and dads have reported many concerns about the inadequate facilities currently provided to our special needs children at St. Martin's School. And although I know and I am excited for the overhaul that we await, I urge government to prioritize their needs and sensitivities in the interim period, also allowing for consultation with parents and teachers who granted our best place to assess the current and future needs of these children. Mr. Speaker, I won't dip into the subject of abortion as the public will be very clear by now where I stand on this sensitive issue in light of the conversations going on in our community. But I think it's important for you to know that together to both the House Mission to the Chief Minister and will be meeting in the weeks to come to discuss how this issue has been considered by the Cabinet and the Executive and move forward from there. year. I was a speaker at the Thanksgiving Recording Festival. I won the Communications Parliament earlier on this year about the epic failure that was the worldwide MTV branding effort through the International Media Space. It was taught by a celebrity, Mr. Speaker, who was set up such a successful figure that found the noise on the other side of the house that doing figures were nowhere near what was apparently bargained for. So, Mr. Speaker, given this reality, I urge government to get it right this year, and that if we are going to remove a project of this size from our own homegrown organizers who have proved to have done so well in previous years, to at least be honest with the public about the limitations of this branding potential, and to keep projecting itself as one with a captive audience in the billions, because it just isn't so, Mr. Speaker. Alternatively, we can just forget about the whole MTV house and return the project to our humanitarian pioneers who had the vision in the first place to grow a nurturing festival to represent their family and their carbon.
Political mental language at work, Mr. Speaker. People must know
form of lawful and well-intentioned defense in order to institutionalize public institutions should always be welcome and encouraged. It is the last operating institution in the absence of the scrutiny that threatens not only to destroy people's faith in that particular institution, but also their belief in the entire system, Mr. Speaker. This, honorable members of Parliament, is what we now call disenfranchisement. It is a global phenomenon that threatens the most essential social consensus of our society. Demagoguery, hypocrisy, party political monarchism, plain and simple diplomacy. All these expressions of disingenuity are a great threat to our social contract. In the age of information, any attempt to engage with the general public that is not honest and transparent is simply irresponsible, Mr. Speaker. It attempts to cause all forms of dissonance or commonplace in this house, I'm afraid. Mr. Speaker, I have learned on other issues of morality and financial services which affect professionals on both sides of the house and outside it, because the world wants to show that we are at the forefront of good practices and compliance moving forward. And I will not hesitate to speak out whenever I see our international reputation is at stake. In Democracy in America, Alexander Tocqueville stated that the health of a democratic society may be measured by the quality of functions performed by private citizens. Fortunately, Mr. Speaker, change is happening. Today, many in our community have understood their responsibility and are executing functions of the highest quality. The future of our democracy has never looked healthy, Mr. Speaker. In my interpretation of the budget in broad terms, I voice my criticisms today unequivocally. However, I will be voting in favor of the budget. The new position, I'm afraid to say, were opportunistic last year and opportunistic again this year. When we vote in the appropriation bill, we vote to maintain and fund our essential services. I support all the reservations in the world, but I cannot vote with the cynicism of the GST position. I seem to want to strip off essential spending and cause political mischief on the way. First, Mr. Speaker, let me just say that responsible governance is not austerity, it is investing in the most vulnerable. I cannot vote alongside a party that appears to offer a piecemeal alternative. So today I am voting in favor of the appropriation bill whilst also offering an authentic alternative. A progressive one, Mr. Speaker, not a regressive one. Mr. Speaker, today, exactly today, takes 5 years that I first stood for a political position in office in a by-election alongside the honourable gentleman across the floor. I have learned many things. Most of all, I have learned that politics can be, and often is, quite terrible. The antagonism, the interest, the unaccountability. But the fact that politics can be terrible is exactly why we need to change it. It is common to analyze modern political history in broad economic phases. Post-war social democracy recovered nations ruined by war and created a strong middle class by public investment. But crises of stagnation gave rise to neoliberalism, regressiveness and culturalized by fitting in the mainstream narrative of financial independence and rampant individualism. It's got us as far as the 20-year-old class, Mr. Speaker, speaking of that promoting greed often promotes desperate inequality. Today, Mr. Speaker, we sit on the brink of a new phase, waiting for a new narrative, a post-neoliberal narrative, Mr. Speaker, one that is honest with the successes and shortcomings of globalization, one that is sober about the link between finance and politics, one that is indignant at the disunity caused by inequality. New politics appears to be universally desired, whether in Europe or America. And the only way to climb above this precipice is to be bold, Mr. Speaker. We must embrace democratic resilience. We must welcome the new generation of voters with an analysis that respects their concerns. Housing, employment, wealth. If we fail to do this, our democracy will be caught in political stagnation, Mr. Speaker. If we succeed, we will begin to usher in a new Gibraltar. A progressive vision that is representative of the people, not the elite. Yes, we are proud diverse, Mr. Speaker. But look around you in your home. Have we done enough to find those members of our community who might not be known, who might not be white, who might not be known, who might not be financially comfortable? I don't say that a global point of this kind is, it has challenged our perceptions of apathy. It has challenged the infallibility of the status quo. It has even challenged privacy politics at its core. Politics can be frustrating, and it can be terrible, but if it was not terrible, I wouldn't spend my time here trying to offer a new path. People are clamoring for it, Mr. Speaker. Those are the new class. Politics is not only terrible because it is tired. It has not represented the people. There is only deep way for a long time now. It is terrible because it is the establishment. It is not us. It is not we, the people. It is them, the elite. Them, the aristocracy. Thinking that they are the courtroom, that they are the person of Parliament, Mr. Speaker. Them, the men. When politics is ruled of people, Mr. Speaker, it is progressive. It is moving forward with a bold march into the future. I'm afraid of partisan corruption, Mr. Speaker. I'm afraid of partisan rising crisis, Mr. Speaker. I'm afraid of a progressive fit for the interests of the people. And it doesn't start here, Mr. Speaker. It starts right there. And out there, more and more people want a new vision. More and more people want to see a democratic reversion. I think we are seeing the beginning of a change that will give Gibraltar progress in Europe and in turn will progress Gibraltar ourselves. The times are changing, Mr. Speaker. Times are changing. As the members of the Summit in 2011, more importantly, the people now know that change is possible. We used to have the change, Mr. Speaker, but now we know we can make the change. And it is time to come together and offer our people a new deal for the 21st century to vote, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
The person who wrote the letter, "The Times They Are Changing," became a Nobel Prize winner. And in doing so, he had said, "I'm a poet, I know, I hope I don't blow it. I will follow that view, I hope, tomorrow at 10:30 in the morning, and I expect to reply to all honourable members." And I move the House is now adjourned today, given the clamour that there is outside to be able to buy for the Christmas tree.
Before I adjourn the House, I say that I often wish to hear here in the House my colleague politician, but not to say for us. So the politics part about the value of public good, about the public good. If it isn't about the public good, it certainly ought to be. You can say that I have a member personally, because I think that the remarks that I made last year about the role of teachers have been very much taken on board. As a result, I think that teachers have been this year much more relevant and much more cogent. So I thank you all. I also like to thank you on behalf of the members of my staff for the very kind remarks that they have made about the service that they do. I've also been proud myself, and I think I should tell all other members, which they probably know, that being in love as I am with this job, I would do it even if I wasn't remunerated. And I think we're now adjourned to tomorrow at 7:30.